welcome to the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Tater. With me is Phil Conan. How are you doing?
Yes, Phil? Good afternoon, Phil.
We're going to talk to Eve Engler today. Eve Engler has written a very good piece for Counterpunch magazine, September the 10th, about Canada and Syria. We're like the rest of the world, are focused on the unfolding, all of them dramatic events around involving Syria, the United Nations, chemical weapons, the Russians, Iran, blah, blah. And we will also be talking at the halfway point with Steve Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. And Gowans has, I notice, has been writing more about, everybody's more focused, everybody's sort of on their toes about things. So that'll be the main material. Also, well, there's a headline today as I came down to the station. There's a report that Turkey has shot down a Syrian helicopter. And the Turkish government said that it was in Turkish airspace. But the helicopter landed in Syria. So it would appear to be in another chapter. That's what we'll have to ask Eve Engler about and Stephen Gowans. I want to make sure we announce, let everyone know that there's going to be a commemoration of the 80th birthday of the late Charles Roach, who is a champion of human equality, rhapsoprosodies, the poetry and paintings of Charles Roach. There'll be rhythmic presentations by Osaz and friends, along with readings and musical presentations by special guests. It's going to be Friday, September the 20th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street, Toronto. That'll be $20 admission, and a book, Charles's book, will be, of course, included in that, so it is a great bargain. So that, again, that's Friday, September 20th, 7 to 9 p.m., with, of course, commemorating the life of the great Charles Roach, and greatly missed, a wonderful figure known around the world, and an outstanding not just in politics, but in art. And I'm really glad to know those paintings will be available there. Friday, September 20, 7 to 9, United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street. And go to freethefive.com, because there's news of they've had a good victory. The U.S. government is being told it's going to have to provide disclose more of about its attempt, I shouldn't say attempt, I guess, successful application of money to journalists, which prejudiced the case against the Cuban Five. FreeTheFive.com is a place to go. But I think we're joined now by Eve Engler. Are you there, Eve?
How's it going, Phil?
Pretty good, and we're glad to be talking to you. You're the guy who has written really the most helpful books so that we can understand what Canada's special role is. I don't know if they're still punching above their weight, but you've had some important comments to make about... Let's start with the question of Canadian non-involvement. On the one hand, the Prime Minister has said, we're shoulder to shoulder with Americans. We completely agree with them. It's appropriate to take action. The Russians are bad. However, we won't actually be going ourselves, which is, there's been comedians talking about wars who parody that kind of stance. What's going on with the Canadian government and its militancy but ambivalence?
Yeah, I mean, I think that to a large extent, the Canadian government's response to Syria, I think there's a certain reflection of the Israeli establishment's priorities, where there is a certain ambivalence towards hostility towards Syria and its position on ties with Hezbollah and Iran, but then there's a fear that the opposition in Syria is going to be worse in terms of disagreeing with the Golan Heights. And so the Canadian government has taken a it's in one sense it's being aggressive. It's funding, put over $5 million into backing rebel groups and their communications work. It's mm-hmm. deepening ties with the Saudi monarchy and the other monarchies in the region that are flowing in billions of dollars of
yes.
weaponry to the Syrian opposition. It's Canadian. Head of Canadian military is in a meeting 3 weeks ago with the heads of the other major countries in Jordan to sort of
yeah.
plan.
Could I ask you, this is Dave Eglin, and by the way, the article is September 10, the counterpunch, Canada and Syria. And you point out there something that I was struck by, that in a way they tried to hide that at first, didn't they? They didn't. General Tom Lawson went to this meeting that you're describing, but there was a sort of a moment there where they were hoping that the meeting wasn't going to be noticed.
Yeah, and I think it became noticed because of other countries coming out about other countries' military being there. And I'm guessing what happened was Lee Bertum, or how we pronounce his last name, at the Ottawa Citizen, connected the dots and checked into the head of the Canadian military being there, and they denied it. They initially said, it had nothing to do with Syria, and then yet we know that 4 months ago the head of the Canadian military was in Jordan. It's very unlikely that they would have two.
The general had to go back and see his Jordanian friends.
Yeah,
I guess what we have, we do have royal families in common. I guess that,
yeah.
Maybe there's something there we don't know about.
They are actively deepening ties with the Jordanian military, but it almost for sure this was part of, as was reported by international media, was part of trying to build a coalition. We know that Jordan is heavily involved in the CIA is training Syrian rebels there, and the Saudis are flowing their weapons through there. But yeah, so they denied it. But you know, this is one of those things with the media. You know, it's reported on once by the corporate media, but there's no sort of follow up. Like, what was actually decided at that meeting? You know, it's not pursued extensively, so we don't have a full sense of Canada's involvement with potentially American attacks.
All those elements. Excluding perhaps Canada, they were about to risk their necks in this in the great Syria showdown that has now receded somewhat. But they were getting ready for something quite nasty. You make some very nice points about in your article kind of the role Canada is playing. And I want to ask you, by the way, whether this is actually, whether Canada itself has crossed the line in terms of international law with, for example, helping establish a pirate radio, the broadcasting into Syria, or assisting people who are inciting armed struggle inside Syria. Is that part of the story?
That seems to be what they're doing. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of details, but that's what both the National Post and the Sun News are reporting, that they've been paying for $650,000, one grant, to set up a radio system for the rebels, who were obviously involved in a war against the Syrian mm-hmm. Government. That clearly would break international norms. I don't know enough about international law to say that, but clearly the Canadian government's costs in terms of supporting mm-hmm. threats of war against Syria, that's a threat in war against the country is in and of itself a contravention
yes.
of international law.
Well, certainly we're getting news today that indicates that it's going to be interesting to see what Canada will say. Apparently there was a press conference today of Kerry, Cameron, and whoever it is from France, who saying that they're going to arm fighters against the government of Syria. That is crossing the line. I mean, that's entirely illegal, I believe it. And I would assume that's a fairly high-risk situation for them, given what the British Parliament said they thought of all this. Another matter, by the way, you call attention to is that the Canadian government has not put the organization called Al-Nusra on the terror list. whereas the United States and Britain do have them on the list. And one wonders, you know, maybe they ought to have a meeting with each other. How does Nusra not make the list? And I believe also that the Canadian government put the Syrian government on the list of terrorists. Could you talk about how we come up with these lists of who's a terrorist and who is not?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's very important to note that this is a very political exercise, and the conservative government, I didn't mention it in the article, but the conservative government has put lots of different groups on the terrorist list in recent years and has been quite active on that front. And you have a situation where almost every Palestinian political organization, major political organization, is on Canada's terrorist list. While
they almost put Jack Layton on the list, am I remember.
Exactly.
Taliban so, Jack.
So this is not like it's not some sort of oversight by the Canadian government. I don't know exactly what was going into it. We do know there's supposedly large numbers of Canadians that have been traveling to Syria to fight with the rebel groups. They're saying more than other Western countries.
Yes, they're saying
over 100.
Yes. People have pointed out you can't put a nickel into a bland cause connected to Palestine without perhaps getting in trouble or being warned that you might. And here are people apparently have their plane tickets and have gone and actually engaged in violence inside the sovereign state of Syria.
Yeah, no, and this is it's part of the they're saying they're not into going to war with Syria, but in so many different ways they're already kind of enabling a war against Syria. I think that one more consequence than the question of the terrorist list is probably the question of their ties with the Saudi monarchy and with some of the Gulf states and the ramping up of Canadian relations with some of these countries, while these countries are just openly funding, arming these groups, and there's no comment. There's lots of comment about Russia and Iran's or Hezbollah's support for the Assad regime, but there's no comment about these Gulf monarchies, and when you know a little bit about these Gulf monarchies and how they operate, to imagine that their objective in Syria has anything to do with democracy or human rights is a very, very difficult.
It's not possible. Is it? By the way, there is a photograph. I've seen it. It's going around the net of some conference was called by the Gulf Council states, all of them monarchies, and it was for freedom and democracy in the Middle East. There's a whole bunch of paid hacks who some of the princes themselves at the conference. I wonder, do they think people are blind? There does seem to be a general kind of awakening. I suppose you've contributed to it, by the way. Eve Engler is the author of a great book, The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, and the ugly Canadian Stephen Harper's foreign policy. Eva, you have also exposed the fact that Canada is not an innocent when it comes to the issue of chemical weapons. Everybody's drawing themselves up now and saying tut tut towards Syria, but you've got a lot of interesting information about allowing experimentation and various other things within Canada of chemical agents. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's a long history. I mean, it's not even just it's not ancient history at all. There's Canadian troops are using white phosphorus in Afghanistan. The General Hillier said it was to try to get rid of 10 foot tall marijuana plants that were causing the Canadian troops difficulty in finding the
phosphorus works.
Taliban. So there's questions about the legality of use of white phosphorus in some context. It's supposed to be considered acceptable use in war, and in other contexts it's considered not acceptable. I don't know all the specifics of this, but it's definitely widely considered a dangerous product. But really the long history of U.S., British testing Canadian chemical weapons in Canada explicitly for use in Vietnam, in the U.S. war against the Vietnam Southeast Asia. That's a CFB gauge town in New Brunswick. Americans saying it's specifically because it's similar type landscape to, you know, the planted sort of defoliage in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. You got a whole history with the base in Alberta, Selkirk, mm-hmm. Where there's, you know, there was supposedly until 89, at least until 89, there was significant amounts of Canadian chemical weapons being stocked, including sarin, which is, of course, what the mm-hmm. gas that has apparently been used to kill 1,400 or so Syrians about a month ago now, I guess. Mm-hmm. So there's history there. There's a history of, you know, some ties to use of napalm, in both Americans and in Vietnam, but also during the Korean War, where Canadian Lester Pearson, External Affairs Minister at the time, complained basically that American censors didn't stop an article about U.S. use of napalm on a village in North Korea, a horrific story that New York Times reported at the time. You have Lester Pearson not complaining about the use of napalm, but complaining that the censors that were in place didn't stop the story from making it into the press because he was concerned that the impact it might have on public opinion. So, you know, there's this history.
Like a good butler. Yeah. Cleans up that mess before anybody notices.
Exactly. So there's as I understand it, the base in Alberta, close to Medicine Hat, very little public attention to the base and all the weapons being tested there. Though there is, I don't know actually where the state of it, but there was a class action lawsuit by former Canadian soldiers who were poisoned while on the base. So it's not not known of at one level because it has become public, but the actual toll of, you know, what was being tested, the biologic weapons being tested, different chemical weapons being tested. You have, you know, American troops or American Air Force dropping biological weapons stimulant over the base, sort of testing to see, you know, what the impact would be to, you know, what would the best method to you know, kill people with these weapons were, and that's sort of all accepted that it happened. It's not, I don't think it's being denied, but there's you know, it's just the media is just, you know, completely you know, ignorant of it, or, you know, chooses to be ignorant of it. And the comments of John Baird a week ago or so saying that, you know, Assad had broken some rule that had stood since the First World War of, you know, not dealing with these weapons. Yet we know it's just huge, you know, testing and stockpiling of these weapons in, you know, in southern Alberta. And it was just a sort of the hypocrisy of it all is almost too much to.
I have to agree with you. I think that they really have. I don't think they quite understand the internet and the time frame. People are learning much faster than they can talk. By the way, Eve, could you remind us? You wrote a brilliant book on this matter of how the Canadian government is very adroit, but particularly Lester Pearson. What's the title of the Lester Pearson book?
It's called Lester Pearson's Peacekeeping: The Truth May Hurt. and it's you know, it's it, Pearson's record is very, very far from what is popular portrayed, and, you know, continues to be popular portrayed by people like Tom Mulcair, from, you know, head of the NDP, to Elizabeth May, to others who continue. Just an article in this week's Hill Times all about how Lester Pearson was alive, he would have done things differently with regards to what's going on in Syria. Just you know, it's just distortions added on top of distortions to make a situation that's so far you know, from the reality of things. And one upside is with regards to the online. I think you're right in that there is it's easier to debunk some stuff, and there is capacity to pass information on along, particularly about international affairs. That I think that has contributed to this sort of reticence to fully get involved in another war against Syria, which is a good thing.
Yes. Well, and lastly, Eve, you and other members of your family have produced a book called The New Communist Manifesto. What is it subtitled? This time we really do have to unite.
Workers of the world, really is time to unite.
Yeah. can you tell us briefly about that book? And, of course, we're going to be talking to one of the other authors later on, but I'd like to get you. You've been touring with the book a little bit.
Yeah, it's mostly actually my father who is the main author, and it's an update of the original manifesto, it's also a call to build a different economic system based upon economic democracy, not this this system of capitalist. Of capitalism, whereby we're quickly ruining our planet and moving towards serious
and exposing us to the wars, if we've been,
and it's bringing us to pushing us towards more imperialist wars, and alongside that, having the majority of working class people, even in this country, which is among the wealthier ones, being. Exploited at work and being offered unfulfilling lives, both in terms of being alienated at work and also being told that the only thing that life's about is to just buy more of some corporation's products.
Yes.
So I think it's imperative. One of the things I was saying in the talks on the book is that I've been involved in lots of international solidarity work and different kind of projects like that. I think that there's a need to have a sort of more systemic criticism for driving to these wars that is driving towards ecological catastrophes and I think to a large extent an economic system based upon $1, one vote is the problem. We need an economic system based upon one person, one vote.
Great. Well, Eve, the article was September 10, for people who want to know, Counterpunch. And of course, the books are great. If people are going to be consumers, they ought to consume your books. Anyway, thanks very, very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Evan.
Okay,
thanks,
bye-bye. Eve Engler. And we have the book by the I think it's a collective effort, although probably father's the principal author. But nonetheless, it's when you're dealing with anglers, you get the whole crowd. Phil, we're going to be talking in about, maybe 5 minutes with Steve Gowans, but I want to ask you, we're trying to stay also on the story of Lac Megantic and what we've learned. And you, I know, have looked at what news do we have on the front?
The longer the investigation goes on, the more it comes out that this operation really stinks, and this railway really stinks. One of the things that came up was that it now appears, and regulators in the U.S. have agreed with, because they've looked into it there, and regulators here have looked into it, that the commodity that was in that train was mislabeled. It was mislabeled as a petroleum oil, which is not particularly flammable, when it should have been. It had the quality of gasoline, which was highly explosive. Mm-hmm. Now, the lawyers for the shipper says, it doesn't make any difference. But it does make a difference because the Montreal, Maine, and Atlantic Railway had a special permit from the federal government to operate this train with only an engineer. Now, my personal view is that permit should never be given to anybody. But at the very least, the people issuing the permit should have at least been aware of the fact that the permit was being issued for a train carrying highly explosive gasoline-like qualities.
Equivalent to gas.
Rather than the
heavy flammability of gas.
That's right. Rather than the heavy petroleum oil, which is not particularly explosive. I mean, those guys who handed them that permit to let one man work that train alone should have at least known that. I'm not saying that decision would have been different because at this point the regulators are like beaten pups, right? They're not allowed to regulate. They're basically because that's the policy of the federal government. But who knows? Maybe one of them would have said, "Wow, that's just too dangerous. You can't do that." Right?
The detail was that I saw and you saw was that We used to call it the manifest, I think. Right. But anyway, on the manifest, it said it was level three product.
That's right, a packing slip level three.
Whereas
it
had started out clearly by the people who handled it, produced it, said it was two.
Right.
And two is flammable as gas. Three is not.
It has to do with the stuff that's coming out of this oil field in North Dakota. I mean, if nobody's noticed, North Dakota is the most booming part of the United States economy for the last 5 years because it has this very high quality, very light oil. Well, you know, that stuff that's practically ready to put in your car. That explodes, right?
Yeah.
That's why they call it light oil, because it's cleaned of the impurities. And somehow the railway, I'm talking about the Canadian Pacific, which originated the shipment.
Somehow, happy accident.
Nobody notices.
It was not the flammable type.
It was
the less flammable
type. Well, and usually when you're shipping petroleum oil, it's not flammable, right?
If you're the guy looking at the manifest and it's rolling past you, you're not very alarmed. But if you were looking at that and it said gas.
That's right. And again, you go back to the shipper says, well, it wouldn't have made any difference if we'd labeled it properly. Well, if that's the case, why have we spent 40 years refining this system of labeling, which is used all over the world, by the way?
Yes.
So this is an interesting. This is a capitalist says, well, it doesn't matter whether you get it right or not.
By the way, it's kind of you to repeat the words of the lawyer for the guy who should be in a slammer for the rest of his life.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, the lawyer.
Let's all remember that's what we're dealing with.
The lawyer should be there for even putting those words in his mouth. I mean, that's absolutely outrageous. No, you're undoing 40 years of trying to make it safe to move these highly dangerous commodities around the world, right? And with that statement,
Well, that's what they always do, right? Yeah. They find, they say, well, we're not going to call it, deadly. We will find another, might be harmful if you ingest it. Particularly if it falls on your head from above, yes. But let me remind everybody, Phil Condon worked for many years on the railroad, was, of course, also a representative often of his union, so he knows something about these matters. And we are keeping track of it. Everybody is now at least more awake. And we had that community, we want to remember, which is only another 90 miles away, I think, was it New Hampshire?
In the state of Maine.
And they had been out with their picket signs saying, we don't want this stuff, only weeks before it happened.
Yeah, the week before it happened.
Yeah.
The week before it happened.
And they were arrested.
Yeah, they were arrested.
And I hope that their lawyer says to the judge, can you, with a straight face, tell these people they shouldn't have stopped?
Yeah.
That was a case of preventive action. Yeah. They were going to save lives. If they'd gotten national attention, they got local reports. Mm. They didn't get national attention.
Not at all.
Had they got national attention, there might have been a guy holding a manifest in his hands and half asleep looking at one of those cars and saying, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This kind of looks like that thing I heard about.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to emphasize one point about this. Because the product was mislabeled, the fire department that was dealing with what was going on after the train crashed in Lac Mégantic, they didn't know what they were dealing with. And they're the ones actually first raised the issue and says, the way this thing is burning, that's not normal.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. That's right.
Right.
And so, the local firefighters are the guys who first put their finger on the problem.
Yeah.
And good for them.
Yes. The guy fighting the fire said, this is not grade three. This is grade two. And so we're going to stay with that because sooner or later, all these guys, as they say, have to come to the table and tell what they know. So we have to make sure we have asked all the right questions. I'll remind you again that on Friday, September 20th, 7 to 9 p.m., United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street in Toronto, a commemoration of the birthday of the late Charles Roach. And his book of poems, Rhapsoprosodies, will be part of the ticket. You will come to get refreshments, hear music, hear readings, and you will also get a copy of that book. We're going to take a brief break. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, and check us on the web, taylor-report.com. We'll be right back.